How you all doing? Good? Relaxed? Want to know who won? I'm not telling you. Have to wait. All right, so we're going to get started. My panel's a little bit smaller than I thought. There's various other things going on today, rehearsals and other bits and pieces. So we may be joined by Kevin. If he makes it down in time. But I think these two are going to be pretty valuable resources for you guys to talk to. So just as a bit of background, in case you don't know who I am, I'm Andrew Parsons. I'm a technical evangelist for Microsoft. I live in Seattle, but by my accent you may be able to tell that I'm actually not from the US, unlike these two. I'm from Australia. And I was, before Microsoft, I was a games journalist in Australia for 10 years. And that's sort of where I really got into connecting with other people in the games industry. So I've been following these guys for a long time and really respect them. My job now is to run the games competition, Imagine Cup, and to travel around the world and talk to college students about development for Windows 8 and game development, things like that, and I have a lot of fun talking with you guys for all that sort of stuff. But I want these two to introduce themselves and talk about a little bit about where they're from and what they do, and then we'll start getting some questions from you guys about careers and industry and stuff. So,
thank you, Andrew. My name is Larry Herb. You probably know me by my gamer tag, Major Nelson. Joined the Xbox team about 10 years ago. Was on the team that developed the Xbox 360, the second evolution of Xbox Live and everyone thereafter. Worked on the product team, helped develop achievements and gamer score. I was one of the team that came up with that concept. And I've been working on the team ever since, and obviously have worked on to a lesser degree, but still involved with Xbox One, which we recently announced. So very excited to be here today and come down and chat with you guys. And you know, had some great few days looking at a lot of the projects. You guys are really, really inspiring, and looking forward to the finals tonight.
My name is Adam Sessler. I've been covering games since 1998 on television until, well, last year, which was 2012. I'm now associated with Revision 3, Rev3Games.com/YouTube. Well, YouTube/Rev3Games, excuse me. I've been able to observe a fairly remarkable growth of the industry, I would say. When I started in 1998, we were really fixated on this small game called Unreal and this other game called Half-Life. We're thinking, they might come to something one of these days. I would have never anticipated that Valve would be the most powerful distributor of games, and that Epic Games would actually probably be better known for helping create the technology behind so many other games rather than making games themselves.
Yeah, that's actually pretty true. That's pretty amazing, actually. Yeah. So some ground rules with questions. These guys will not give you feedback specifically about your projects. It's just, this is not the forum for that. But I do believe both of them have offered up willingness to give you advice and tips and stuff. After the competition is finished, I think you're both happy to share contact details with people, so feel free to do that. But in this forum, we're not going to answer questions like that. But what I did want to ask these two guys before you guys ask questions was your impressions generally of the games this year, and how you felt the presentations, hands-on and stuff was, as well as the tech that you saw.
Well, once again, I mean, this is my second year judging, and I'm just impressed with the level of professionalism that each of the teams brought. I mean, I'm so amazed, and Adam and even Andrew as well. When I was your age, we didn't have access to this level of technology. We just didn't. And I don't want to sound like that old guy, get off my lawn, but you guys are living in a tremendous golden age of gaming right now, where you're going to help define the next generation of experiences. When we think that just 10 years ago, there was really just the Xbox, the PlayStation, we think about even the phones. cell phones, and there's no such thing as a smartphone, Facebook or Twitter. So we think what has happened in the past 10 years, you guys are living through, you guys are involved right now in the middle of this transition to smartphones, tablet-based devices, and beyond. It's just, it's so extraordinary to see the way that you embraced it in many of your projects and the way that you had this real forward-thinking vision.
Yeah, I agree. I don't want to be redundant with Larry here, but what really struck me this year is everyone seemed to come across like they knew about games. That, you know, that you guys, it's not that you had played a game. That would hopefully be requisite if you're going to try to make a game, but that you understood them, you had already deconstructed them in your head, and you knew what those basic components were, and you also knew that you had to change them somehow. And alter them to make them interesting, to sort of, you know, re-interest the player in these sort of tropes, in these ways that you interact with the game, to make it new and engaging.
Cool. Thanks, guys. We're going to start opening it up now. So if you have a question, put your hand up. We've got a mic here. So anyone want to start?
So Xbox One.
Actually, I just want to talk real quickly. Like, we're not going to be going into any policies, distribution, pricing, or any of those details right now. This is not really about that product. I'm happy to answer some high level questions or discuss anything we've already announced.
Okay. Question was, I just said. I really like the concept doing it like Steam because I come from the PC side, and I would like to ask if you have the impression if it just was kind of bad marketing, how you told people what you like to do, and if you have the impression if the crowd just don't get it. what's great about the new things? And I heard it's a change back to old console times, which are also great. But yeah, I'd like to hear something about that if it's possible.
I'll say this: is that when we developed the original vision for the Xbox One, it was a very futuristic view. We could have created Xbox 360 version 2. That was very simple. We know how to do that. What we wanted to do with Xbox One is go into a completely different direction. We'll look at the future. And in that really caused us many over the past few years and with the development of the product to rethink the ecosystem and everything from the entire stack, from the game development side, from the user side, from the hardware side. What does it mean? What does the next 10 years of gaming look like? And that was that is the vision of Xbox One. Certainly, we've got the cloud-powered elements. There's some of the policy changes that we've been talking about over the past few weeks, and that we stand by those. We think that Xbox One is the best gaming console because it's going to embrace the future. I don't want to say future-proof, but it kind of is in a lot of ways in terms of this connected experience that will grow with you. For every one console that we sell, we've talked about the fact there's going to be three in the cloud in terms of the power, and we still believe that. The console, much like Xbox 360 and even back at the original Xbox, fantastic gaming experiences, but when you plug them into Xbox Live, it creates a wonderful, wonderful ecosystem. Both in terms of multiplayer experiences, online experiences, your friends list, downloadable content, and so on and so on and so on. And we want to take that with Xbox One. We're redesigning and redeveloping Xbox Live to embrace the future. So certainly there's been some churn and some changes in the policy, based on some of the feedback that we got. But we're not abandoning our future vision. We want to go there. It's going to take a little longer. We need to do a better job of taking users on the journey with us and getting them there. And we're going to overwhelm you with the possibilities of the digital marketplace.
Sounds good.
Very nice, Larry. Very nice.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah. Okay.
The one thing I would say is I would pay attention to where this is going with Microsoft. I'm independent of all of this, and I think that there has been some messaging issues. None of it falls to Major Nelson right here. But we are going to look at something that is increasingly more digital. That puts you guys in a far more interesting situation because that is not – people are slowly getting accustomed to the idea of purchasing and finding their games in a way that isn't physical. They're not getting the disc. I think that gives all of you far more opportunity. What we haven't figured out yet, how do you reach that audience? How do you say, hey, I got this game over here? Because there's so much noise, there's so much clutter that's out there. If you go to the iTunes store just for music – You realize that, like, you know there's good music there. There's no way you're going to find it because it's telling you to listen to Amanda Bynes or something like that. And when we find that language, that new way of manipulating social networking and these other means of trying to reach that audience and say, hey, I have a really cool game. I have it for free. I have it for a dollar. Please try it out. I mean, that's the opportunities are there. I think the technology has gotten so advanced that we haven't caught up with it because we're still thinking in kind of a 20th century way of trying to sell and reach our audience.
I actually want to follow up a little more. When Xbox 360 came out, we developed the Xbox Live and the XNA Studio, and we were basically the original place for indie games. We're not abandoning that future. I know there's a lot of chatter right now on the internet. Oh, my God, Sony's doing this. Sony's just writing checks, okay? We've got a wonderful plan that we're not ready to share with you yet, but we do have a plan. We're not abandoning independent developers like yourselves. We want to give you guys that access to the marketplace so that you can distribute your goods. It's a remarkable, remarkable opportunity. And I don't want to date myself too much, but back in my day, when before there was even CompuServe or anything like that, you would go to Fry's. I don't know if you remember this, or if you guys remember this, but there were electronic stores, and if you as developers wanted to distribute your stuff, you'd have to go down and set up a card table with discs and hand them out to people going by. And then those people come back next week and give you feedback on your builds. I mean, that's crazy. And that was just local people. Now, with Xbox Live and some of the stuff that we've built and we're going to be building, you have access to a global audience. It doesn't matter whether I'm distributing it to Andrew, who's next door to me, or Andrew's down in Australia. It doesn't matter. All of a sudden, the barriers come down, and you get access to this tremendous amount of feedback to make your product better. So anyway, to put a fine point on it, we're not abandoning independent developers. We've got a great plan that we're going to be sharing with you in the future.
Hi. One question. Yes, you talk about helping independent developers distribute and test a game, but in the development area, is there any sort of specific framework that may be coming, or is basically one of the, how do you say this? No, compromise. The Unity now, Microsoft said how they were very, how they partnered with Unity to help developers. Is there going to be any other framework, or is it always going to be focused on engines, basically? I don't know if you understand me, because before there was the XNA framework, you can program whatever. They stopped giving support to XNA. And now everything kind of fell back to making your own engines and frameworks using engines.
And this is kind of what I said a little bit earlier is we're working on some things. Right now, to be honest with you, the focus is shipping the console. As you know, as developers, and I've told each one of you this, if I haven't, I'm going to tell you now, shipping is a feature. It's a very important feature. Having the game and developing it and kind of showing it off is great, but actually shipping it and giving it to people and getting real feedback, that's a massive feature. So right now we're focused on shipping the console. We're not abandoning the independent developers. We do have some plans. Again, I can't give you specifics, but we'll get there. I think you'll be happy. I hope you'll be happy.
I hope so.
I was wondering, what are today's some of the must-haves today regarding services for games? and what might be some of the must-haves in the future?
That's an interesting question, because we saw a number of games this week with social media or leaderboards and stuff in the cloud and sharing and stuff. So what do you guys think?
No, that's a great question. Obviously, you see a lot of that. It's like, okay, we have leaderboards. We're using the cloud to share this. There's ways to bring people in the game. At the end of the day, no one is going to buy a game because it has cloud services. They're going to buy the game because the game is fun. You're not going to share high scores with other people unless people want to play that game and you're interested enough in that game to see who's good at it. So don't start with the logic of, hey, how can we manipulate all these new things that are really, you know, fun and interesting and all these publishers want to see it. You have to have core gameplay that is compelling enough that you actually pay attention to it.
You talk about services, and to build on what Adam was saying is, and I'm not going to call any specific games out, not your games, but professional games. We've all played those games where, like, God, why did they do multiplayer? It's ridiculous. Because developers, you get in there, it's like, let's do multiplayer. It's cool. Well, no, it's not. Don't do it. There's no reason to do it just because you can do it. It has to add to the experience. And I look at that across all the services. Don't add Twitter or Facebook just because you can. What value does it bring to the user? Always, if you have any questions at all, default to the user. What does the user want? How does this benefit the user? So as far as services, you know, we talk about the cloud. The cloud is such a question mark. We've seen all the chatter. What does it mean? You know, we've seen people use it for hosting servers for multiplayer to these crazy leaderboards. I mean, we've seen over the past generation, Gesundheit, over the past generation, we've seen leaderboards in a really creative way, used in very creative ways. One of my favorite is if you play Trials HD. Great game, addictive. When all you see when you see where your friends are, they're going by, you know, how you win past them or they're a little bit, that's all it is a leaderboard. But it's an interesting twist on it because now it's visual and it's in the play space and I can see exactly what's going on. But at the end of the day, the back end is just a leaderboard. So it's how do you take the existing services, perhaps some that aren't developed yet, and use them in new and interesting ways, like Trials.
Yeah, I agree entirely with Larry here. One of the things that I've been seeing this year in terms of how games have been shifting, how we're going to see something different in the next generation, is that we're not siloing aspects of the game, be it something like leaderboards, if it's multiplayer versus single player. If you look, I have never been a fan of the Need for Speed series. I've been an acknowledger of the Need for Speed series, I think, for the past 10 years. But here you have a game where there is multiplayer, but you're never really being, you're never saying, hey, I want to do multiplayer now. There's a different game there. Or, you know, I want to just play by myself. It just happens organically. We've been seeing examples of that, like Test Drive Unlimited. But when the player isn't having to choose, you're not putting the burden upon them to go to a different aspect of the game. And it does come down to something as simple as representing a leaderboard as a ghost inside of your gameplay experience. Just remind them. You know, it's there, it's available, and that's how they're going to engage with those broader aspects of your game. Because no one says, I need a social game. No one has ever said that. What they say is, I need a game. Oh, it has this other thing because I already like your game, and that's how they engage with it, and that's how you can get them to stay with it and build a relationship with your title over a long period of time.
But and to one thing, and I'm sorry, we'll just keep going on. At the end of the day, all those things don't matter if your game is not fun. Okay, it doesn't matter how great the graphics look. It doesn't matter what it sounds like. It matters at the core game, is it fun? And that's the most important thing. All those other things you can build on top of it, but unless you've got that beautiful foundation, I wish Alexei was here to talk about.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the guy, you know, Alexei, who invented Tetris. Classic example. Okay, when we played it back in the day, and even now, all it is moving blocks around, but it's fun. It's a simplistic game that's fun. We've all played those simple games that you play them, and they're like, wait a minute, there's actually a game here, and it's a lot of fun. Don't add all these features on just to add them on. Make the game, make the nut, make it really, really shine.
One thing I love about Alexei is when he talks about creating Tetris and the little tiny things that made it the magic that it is. You know, so he was saying when he originally designed it, it actually had five different shapes. and it just wasn't working. And then he dropped one of the shapes to only have the four core shapes, and all of a sudden it was like this magical thing happened, and it was fun for people to play. It all made sense. And it's just little tweaks like that. It was interesting. We asked him yesterday if he thought that Tetris was going to be a big game when he made it. Because when you look at it, it's a pretty simple little puzzle thing, right? And he said, well, yes. I thought it was going to be big. And I think I see that in some of you guys as well. Like, you presenting your games, and it may be a simple puzzle game or platformer, but I can see the passion in your eyes. I can see the energy that you've got there, that you just know you've got something a bit special. So, just keep looking at that, getting people to play it and test it, and you know.
I think one of the key things to take from that Alexi story is restraint. You know, yeah. No one is going to know what you took out of your game. You know, it is responsible to look at it and say, okay, I know I love that so much. There's an American writer named Raymond Carver, who I quite admire, but he has a rather dark phrase about the process of writing, and it's called kill your babies. There are those things that you're going to love in that game, and you know that is a great idea. It just might be too much. It doesn't fit within the context of this particular title, yeah. And you're going to have to just get over that hump and say, no, we're going to take it out. And always remember, you're aware that there was something there that's not. The player, if you do your job correctly, the player will never know that it was there in the first place. They're just going to know the experience that they're getting.
Question here.
A lot of old genres have been coming back, you know, like point and clicks, like The Walking Dead. Obviously, I love that game. But as professionals, especially Adam, since you're working, been researching games and their trends. Oh, all of you, but
it's a wonderful way of putting it.
I'm sorry?
my mom would never describe my job that way.
Trend researcher, yeah.
Well, could I say like you're like a professional geek?
No, you're getting close now.
Cool. Now, how do you see... How do you see, like, which trends will be coming back, in your opinion? And not only in specific, you could separate it, like, in different group of ages. Maybe young children, maybe young adults, maybe old people. But how do you see the industry evolving?
If we knew that, you know, I wouldn't be here. Because I'd have the, you know, that's kind of the future vision stuff. I'll say this, and it gets kind of back to what I was saying a little bit earlier. Fun doesn't go out of style. Okay, that's it right there. That's, you know, fun doesn't go out of style. Good character development doesn't go out of style. You know, you talked about The Walking Dead. So those two things are critical. Now, one thing that really annoys me is when I'm playing a game that's fun and they decide to put a backstory and a character. Sometimes I don't need character. I just don't. I'm happy to, you know, do I need characters with Tetris? No. Can you imagine that? No. So it's you know, you want to make sure that you have at least one of those two elements. You've got to have the fun. You got to, some of them have two. We certainly played The Walking Dead. It's at its core, you said it yourself, it's a point and click game, but it's the writing and the characters.
And it used to be a dead genre, but suddenly you put a good story, a good element,
right,
and a different vibe that you didn't used to have.
Right.
And suddenly it becomes
becomes magic.
I think a key thing, I want to retrain your thinking there, because I would say the same thing as you. There are some new genres coming back, and I'm going to speak to that in a moment. But Alexi with Tetris, I would even say, you know, Telltale with The Walking Dead, they don't sit around going, I want to make a puzzle game. They make a game, and they're like, oh, there's a puzzle element to it. You know, don't think, and don't create that own taxonomy in your head that I need to fit this genre. Make the game. The game will define whatever genre it is. And if it's a hybrid of both, then it is. That really isn't the right way to approach something. Having said that, what I'm really excited about is when you look at mobile, and that it does offer more asynchronous play. And I think it's a stronger platform for playing with other people, but you're not playing at exactly the same time. It's bringing back things that I've really missed, which is turn-based RPGs, turn-based strategy, and adventure games, things that don't have to engage the player immediately where it's not Twitch-based, because I don't think the platform has developed far enough to really accommodate the shooters and everything that for reasons that baffle me. It's like, oh, let's put Noble 3 on mobile. It's like, well, okay, but I'm playing Halo at home, so I know how this is lacking. Turn-based, the isometric, you know, things that are based on systems. Because when you have the time and you're sort of looking at it in that space and you're interacting with it and it's so intimate, that's when I want to I call them fiddling games. And that's when I want to build up a character and decide to, you know, choose all of his stats. Or I really want to just survey a landscape and decide where I want to move my army.
Kind of like Infinity Blade. Kind of like Infinity Blade, for example.
See, in Infinity Blade, with all due respect to Epic and all that, it's a very impressive technology demo, but what I want to play on a tablet is Civilization. Or I want to play like one of the original Fallout games. Not 3, I want to play 1 or 2. You know, that kind of stuff where it's not asking me to be highly reactive, it's asking me to think. Mm-hmm. And I can spend as much time as I ever want before I make my decision in that playing. I think that game recognizes that I play a lot of games on my phone when I'm at the doctor's office. I am not looking to be challenged at the doctor's office. Why? Someone's going to put their finger up my butt in a few minutes. Okay? It is, think about your audience and the circumstances that they might be interacting with your game at various phases during, you know, the rather mundane qualities of their life.
There's a game idea. Adam's butt. There you go.
So Adam's... And I don't think that would be the most outrageous game idea that's come out of Adam. So I want to ask you guys a question. There's been some really interesting trends and shifts in the industry during the time we've been around. Things like multiplayer, like actual online, like Xbox Live. Achievements, I think, has been a pretty fundamental shift in the way people play games. And then we're talking about mobile. What's been the most interesting shift that you...
For me, this actually goes back about 8 years. It is those magical co-op experiences where it's me and a buddy against the AI. You know, I look back to the original Splinter Cell. Do you remember the Spy versus Mercs in Splinter Cell? Yeah, well, it was the first or second one. I think it was the first one. Anyway, those experiences to me that are co-op where I'm working with a buddy, like, for instance, using voice over Xbox Live, and we're solving a problem or we're going against another team. Again, 4 people in Borderlands or Borderlands 2, the co-op experience is freaking amazing. That is just nothing but balls-out fun. You know, when you get those right moments where you're working together as a team against the game. And that's, to me, that's been one of my favorite developments as I look at games that really do co-op in a smart, creative, interesting way. The co-op for Portal 2. Think about that. Where you're trying to solve, you have to work together. That's the only way you're going to solve the problems.
No, I agree completely. I think also with co-op is you really start to understand the elegance of the designer and the developer. Because you have to make a more sophisticated system if you have 2 people playing that you can't account for what their behavior is, and you have a puzzle and you have a challenge set in front of them. I said this all, I think, for the past 10 years. I'm blanking on the Russian gentleman's name who's well known for chess and who now I think has some. What was that?
Kasparov.
Yeah, Kasparov. Yeah. So when he's playing IBM's Deep Blue, I think we all get fascinated by that because there's an intrinsic desire, I think, as human beings, that we aren't going to create Skynet and destroy ourselves. And I know we love to play against other human beings in multiplayer, but humans have been competing against humans in war for probably a few thousand years. And that there is something innately fascinating about trying to test the computer, and that really does come out when you're playing co-op, because you're really trying to see if the computer is sophisticated enough to both give you a challenge and be dumb enough that you can beat it.
Cool. Another question from the audience.
Oh, and thank you.
Behind.
I know the...
Chris. You first.
Okay. I know fun is the core element of games, but is there a specific way of measuring fun? Is it just like you take the console and I'm enjoying, or is there any analytical thing like how much engaging it is and how much time do you solve for something?
Can you define metrics around fun?
It's No. It's kind of like pornography. You're going to know it when you see it. Right? I mean, some of the things you sit down and you start playing a game, you're like, "Oh, this is kind of silly." But we've all had those moments where an hour and a half later, it's not silly. Right? We're like, "Okay, now I get it." And we've all had those moments where you put the controller down or you shut it off and you go away and that's all you think of is that game. And you have to go back because you solved that problem. So it's really hard to quantify and say X plus Y equals fun.
Yeah, I see this in tons of games. I'm not saying I saw it from you guys. But I'm saying in professional, very expensive, highly funded games that, okay, if game X over there had a certain sequence and people like that, then we can do the same thing. And it doesn't work that way. And you know that in all entertainment. Once it's been done, replicating it only seems to diminish that sense of thrill, that sense of invention. No, there are no metrics around fun. Having said that, I think one of the biggest advice I give to people that want to kind of cover games, talk about games, write about games, is you have to be obsessed with that idea. Why is this fun? We all know when we sit down and the game is fun. But if you try to articulate and spell out in sentences why something is working, not just because it has a dragon in it, not just because, okay, I really like that shotgun. What is it about the feedback that the player is getting in that moment that makes it so thrilling, so compelling, and you can't put it down? That is something I still feel challenged to try to explain to other people. But it's that question and the search and the exploration for that question that will keep you on your toes as a good developer, and you'll keep innovating going down the line because there isn't something you can just lean on that people always come back to, unless it's falling blocks that you rearrange on the bottom of the screen.
Do you want to pass the mic down in the front here?
Hi. So recently I've been just starting to get back into gaming more, and I'm getting a bit more obsessed with the idea of blending the line between, like, let's say, a game in anime or a game in a TV show. So, for example, a game like Catherine, which has very strong, good puzzle mechanics, but blends it really well with, like, an anime kind of choose-your-own-adventure storyline. Do you think that's going to become something we're going to see more of the next console generation?
And we were chatting about this last night. I will acknowledge that. Catherine is so unique, so out there. I don't think we'll see Catherine 2 coming from other people, but what you just described, the way you described it, how different is that from Walking Dead? Where, and I love that you said the choose your own adventure. How many of you are aware of, it was very popular in the 70s and 80s in the US, they're called choose your own adventure stories? Okay, I'll explain them. They were books, and you would read it, and it's like, if you want to do this, go to page 14. Go to page 14. And you know, you would make you would kind of build your own story. And I loved it as a kid because I was already aware of narrative. I was aware of movies. You know, when you're young, especially, and I think even when you're old now in modern society, media shows people having way more fun than you. They have a gun. They have a beautiful wife. They're sailing on a ship, and you're sitting in an office feeling crappy about yourself. And when you give the player that sense of agency, that they are taking ownership over something kind of awesome, you really are indulging an innate desire to be a lit. You know, it goes back to Homer. You want to be just awesome. You want to be a hero. Not Homer Simpson. I meant the blind poet who talked about war and stuff. And, you know, but I think those, something as simple as that mechanic can resonate with an audience. You don't have to have multiplayer. You don't have to have, you know, really kind of deep, you know, very contemporary, you know, gameplay devices. You just need to give that player that moment that they can kind of break out of their life and do something kind of awesome and feel that they are responsible for it.
You know, you bring up Catherine, and I think that it's a great, great example, but that's one that didn't really break out and go mainstream. Hardcore gamers loved it. I thought it was brilliant and fascinating. What I'd like to see is perhaps a version of Catherine that's, how do I say this? Weird's okay. I don't mind that, but it was. I mean, come on, that was weird.
It's a very strange game.
But you know, we talked about the puzzles. Imagine a world where we've got a game like Catherine on Xbox One, and I'm not confirming it's coming. That's not what I'm saying. But imagine that, but where we're using the back-end cloud and we're crowdsourcing puzzles that are changing endlessly. That's really interesting. So think about, take these experiences, start connect using this connected experience, and all of a sudden you've got something very dynamic and very different every single time you play.
Questions? While you're about to ask your question, I just wanted to give you a funny story. We're talking about digital distribution, and we see distributed teams of developers and stuff. When I wrote my first game in 1983, we used...
What'd you write it on?
A Commodore VIC-20.
Okay.
4K of RAM.
Okay, awesome.
4K.
Now, right. You used to save it on a cassette deck, right?
That's what I was about to say.
Yeah.
Do you guys know audio cassettes? That's what I used to save my games on. And my first game, which was brilliant, by the way, would have revolutionized the industry, was taped over by my sister, who recorded the radio. And I lost it forever.
Well, she needed the Bee Gees.
It was Come On Eileen, actually.
There you go.
it's just, for me, the technology advancements, you know, year after year and decade after decade, it's just staggering for me. I just think back to that and just go, wow. And all that code I used to type in from magazines. And
right, yeah. Right. Oh, man. No copy-paste then.
No.
Anyway.
About achievements and fun, having been part in developing achievements, how do you feel about the overuse of achievements as kind of a game mechanic? And... yeah, because sometimes to me it feels like there's an achievement popping up every 5 minutes and I want to enjoy the game, but there's always something going on.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's certainly something that it almost is like a cheap ploy. They want to create a cheap metagame, you know, and they start to lose their significance. I completely agree with you. It's been disappointing to see how they, for lack of a better term, abuse the system, and it's kind of a drag. But
some of you here actually might not know. I got in trouble over, actually it was a trophy, not an achievement. It was in God of War Ascension. I found that it was a little mean-spirited and nasty towards women. But David Jaffe, who actually made the original God of War, was not responsible for the game that came out. He kind of came into the conversation and said something that I think had been bothering me, that achievements and trophies have been bothering him more and more because they can't take the player out of the experience. And it's almost like there's a fourth voice. It's like the clown in a Shakespeare play who will come on the stage, acknowledge the audience, and say, hey, you and I both know this. These idiots don't. It can be a very, very effective tool, but it also, you don't want to always remind the player that someone made the game. Because if they're fully immersed in that experience, it just becomes something that they're engaging in, and you don't want to have this new voice that's coming in kind of mocking them, reminding them that, you know, it can turn into something very pedestrian. I think in the long run, though, what achievements, when they're used correctly, is they help guide the player to experiences they may not know for themselves are available in the game. You know, have you collected all these things? Have you realized? I think it was Fable. You know, Fable 2, I played it for about 25 hours, and I found my first gargoyle. Yeah, I shot it. And then like an achievement came up. I'm like, these things have been in the game for the past. I realized they're all around me. Now I just opened up hours of gameplay experience. So they can be used very poorly, and I think there's a new trend to kind of be kind of the wisecracking developer. But they can also be a way of saying, hey, yes, that wasn't an accident. We've been hiding that from you. Have fun.
Yeah, I think, and the favorite achievements that I've seen are ones like that. That you just you're playing the game. First of all, I'm the type of person when I play a game that I don't even look at the achievements. I just want to play the game and experience it. And oh, okay, so if I, you know, and I've actually gone back and go, oh, if I had done that, you know, back at level 2, I could have gotten a 50 point achievement. Screw that, I'm not going to go play that again. You know, we've all had that. So the achievements can be used in a very creative way and abused, like Adam said. That's why we actually redesigned achievements in Xbox One, where they're dynamic in their back end on the server side, where they can be changed on the fly and really, really dynamic for exactly that's one of the reasons is so that all of a sudden we can, you know, if people like shooting gargoyles, okay, well, maybe we can make more achievements around there or something along those lines. But they, to your point, they absolutely can be abused, but they can also be shut off so you don't notice them. A lot of people forget that. Should we introduce this random person who just wandered in off the street?
So welcome, Kevin.
Well, what I was going to do is if you weren't here by the end, I was actually going to invite everyone to go up to your room. We're going to go bang on the door.
Yeah. Okay. That was the plan. Rewind the tape, you know. So how about you introduce yourself, a little bit of history, just like a 1-2-minute thing. Try and keep it short. Kevin.
Hi. Hi, guys. My name is Kevin Dentz. First off, I'm really sorry for being late. I injured my back at the beginning of the week, and last night when I went back to my room, I took a sleeping tablet instead of a muscle relaxing tablet by mistake. Yeah, so I was like, I woke up and I was like, "Oh, it's noon," and Andrew's angry. So, anyway, so a bit about my background. I've been in the industry for about 14 years. I got into it something similar to Larry through embezzlement, where I sort of misappropriated some funds and hired some developers, started making mobile games. Spent most of my career trying to elevate up to console. And by the time I got to console, everyone was like, "Oh, fucking mobile, it's great." And so I've been going up and down between console and mobile ever since. My most recent games, my first game this year was a game on iOS called Tap Rocket. Did pretty well. It was featured as Game of the Week on iPhone. Can I say iPhone? Okay.
Yes.
Okay, on the amazing platform iPhone. And it's going to be announced in a couple of days, so this is just between us, that Recoil, our first-person shooter, has been approved on Xbox Live Arcade and PC. So that's a bit about me. If you want to know more, you can ask me in the bar for a drink.
So we have about 15 minutes left. Other questions?
Wow.
I have another one.
Sure.
It's a pretty standard question, but let me elaborate. Where do you see the future of consoles? Because I feel like any device we use today is heading towards a multimedia device. And is there a market, I guess, for game-specific consoles? And I guess this comes back to the Xbox One, which seemed to be advertised as a multimedia device. And does it really make sense today to advertise something as a console when pretty much any device can be a console?
I'll let Kevin start, and then I'll correct him.
Okay. Hands up in the room, how many people have a Vita? Yeah.
Yeah.
So we've got two fools. Okay. Three fools in the room, okay? No one walks out their house anymore and says, "iPhone keys, wallet, my Vita." Okay? You don't have to have a fully immersive mobile experience, okay? I think the only time I take my Vita out of my house, and I have one because Sony sent me one for free, okay, you don't need to have that in your pocket anymore. Good enough, okay, on the bus for 10 minutes or 20 minutes is fine, okay? But you're right, okay? You need to have, your device needs to do multiple things. With the console, and I actually liked the Xbox One, and I'm going to criticize Microsoft here, I thought that the way they went backwards on their recent press was stupid, and they should have basically said, "This is our vision." Okay, when the iPhone first came out, a lot of you guys were like infants. Okay, I'm kidding. So you can laugh. So when it first came out, there was outrage. There was front page news articles saying Steve Jobs isn't listening to the consumer. Okay, because the consumer wants basically a physical keypad to dial the numbers. Guess what? Jobs was right. Okay, there's an old French story. I'll be really quick on this. There's an old French story, okay, where this aristocrat in Paris sees a mob running through the streets, and he runs back into his house, starts getting dressed, and his wife said, "What are you doing?" And he said, "I need to catch up with my people, find out where they're going so I can lead them." Okay? Xbox could have done that. I think you're exactly right. It's a multimedia device now. You want fewer boxes, not more boxes. The Xbox One, for me, I seen it. I'm going to buy all consoles because I have to, because of work. But as a consumer, I would have gone with the Xbox One.
So I'm not going to get into the policy side of it, but I'll just say this, is that I don't know if you've had a chance to look at our vision and how we design the platform. There are three virtual machines on that unit, one for the game, one for multimedia, and then kind of a traffic cop that kind of keeps track of everything for exactly that reason. You know, with Xbox 360 over the years, we've seen more and more people watching Netflix. I've seen the numbers. You would be stunned at how many people use the Xbox 360 to watch Netflix. It's unbelievable. So when we designed the Xbox One platform, we wanted people to be able to say, "I want to watch Netflix, HBO Go, whatever your video provider is," and then literally instantly switch to my game, and then instantly switch back. Because of exactly what you described, is we want a device that can kind of do multiple things. We firmly believe that the age of a dedicated box is kind of passé. We want our phones to do multiple things. Even calling it a phone is a little insulting. We want our mobile devices to do multiple things. Our PCs certainly do it. So our console is going to do, and that's why we made the investment that we're doing with the different virtual machines, with the fact we're going to have HDMI in, so you can just watch your TV and instantly switch to a game. There's a lot of reasons that we're making this the one device that you need, and it's for input one, for exactly that reason.
Earlier when I was talking about like the major shift that I'm seeing happening in terms of game design, that we're not siloing aspects of a game. There's not single player, multiplayer, leaderboards, credits. That, you know, it's all going to happen organically, and I think that same logic is becoming more evident in the consoles. And so I think that it's supposed to be a unified entertainment device, because it logically, you don't sit around going like, you say, "Hey, I would like to be distracted from how miserable I am right now." You don't say, "Hey, I want to have a movie, I want to have a TV show, I want to have a game." Any types of those distractions would be acceptable in that moment. Why not get it on one machine? It reminds me of a band that once said that all music was going to finally become just one low resonating bass line that would supplement the need for food and sex. I think that's a way of looking at consoles, that we are still trying to understand where the technology is going from the technology that currently exists. And that's where we're getting ourselves into trouble. I think Microsoft has made terrible mistakes. But at the same time, I think that they actually have a very fascinating device that is very hard to understand and to articulate, because we can only understand it and appreciate it from the devices that we currently have. And that really is, I think, sort of the challenge to you guys as developers. And that's why I kind of, you know, cautioned you about saying, "Hey, what genres are big?" Because if you go into it from the understanding of the game industry as we know it now, you're going to limit yourselves. The idea is, I'm just going to make something. Let me figure out what it's going to be. You leave it to me to figure out a name for it. That is not your bother. You know, you want to be James Joyce making me go crazy for the next 80 years trying to figure out what you wrote. It's you don't think about how I'm going to understand it and how I'm going to articulate it.
I just want to say one more thing before we get going. Is with the original design platform for Xbox One, everybody in here is perfectly comfortable with going in, switching on the input, finding the right way, turning it on. But for every one of us that is technically inclined, I think we're probably all nerds in our family and we have to help our moms and our wives and our girlfriends, right? We've all been there. We're trying to create a device that is going to allow you as developers get your content on a box that our wives and our mothers and our girlfriends are going to use on a regular basis. And that's very powerful. That's one thing that the iPhone has done very well, is they've made it easy and approachable, and that's what we're trying to do with Xbox One.
But that's what I'm wondering about. Does it even make sense to call it a console? Because what we think of as a console isn't what we...
It's interesting you say that, because I was looking on the Amazon UK site and Amazon US. We were actually the number one selling device in the AV section. Game consoles, we were number one or two, I think, behind Last of Us. But exactly to your point, is you're going to see our console marketed in areas that you probably wouldn't see. It'll show up at your local electronics store, kind of over there, maybe with the VCRs or the Blu-ray players, kind of not in just the gaming section, but elsewhere as well. We've got a much broader story there that we can offer.
So that's great. We're almost out of time, so I'm just going to ask these guys one fun kind of question, and then we'll finish. So no barriers. What's been your favorite game this year?
For me, it was Last of Us. It was a Sony exclusive. Sorry, Larry. But I think it pushed the industry further because, so, a friend of mine, a guy called Cliff Blazinski, was the chief creative officer he was the creative director for Gears of War. Okay. He used to do interesting storylines. I like the premise of the story rather than the story. So. Over the last couple of years, the story has been getting better, okay? This has been the first year where there's been a perfect storm, where the gameplay, story mode, and the acting, okay, has come together and was brilliant. I could only play Last of Us in like 2 to 3 hour chunks because it was so overwhelming, and I didn't know how to handle it, because... You got to understand, for a lot of us on this panel, when we play a game, it's like we're trying to figure out how to cheat the other guy. We're trying to figure out what's the secret this other guy's secret sauce. And I envy a lot of gamers because they can just sit down and enjoy a game, you know. When Adam is doing it, he's thinking about... Oh yeah, this is like this game and this game, and this is how it can tie it together. Oh,
it's inevitable. I mean, it's unconscious.
Yeah. In Larry's case, he's thinking probably, oh shit, this is going to sell another 100,000 PS3s. Okay. We all have a motive, so it's strange in this industry. But for me, it was Last of Us.
The reason I hesitated, because Last of Us is a game that I think will probably stay on my top five for the next decade, if not more than that. But also, and people just ask me this every single day, do you like Bioshock Infinite more than Last of Us? And it's apples and oranges. There's so much to the nature of the experience. And so because Kevin talked about Last of Us, I don't want to hit on it too heavily. I know there's been a lot of kind of, you know, reconsidering of Bioshock Infinite, but once again, it delivers something as an experience. I didn't ever imagine games would go there. You know, when you spend just 2 hours and you're not shooting, you're not, you know, doing anything game-wise, but you're kind of lost in a world and you're lost in somebody else's imagination. That is my favorite part about games. I come from a literature background. I love, you know, reading books. Because I was a lonely person, and my parents wouldn't buy me a gaming console. And, you know, I was an English major in college, and it's just, you know, those moments where you realize this man might be completely crazy who's driving the car, but I want to see where he's going to take me. And I think we've already seen two exquisite examples of that came out this year, and it's Last of Us and Bioshock Infinite. I'm not saying that you guys should go out and try to replicate what they did. They did it over many, many years. They made many, many people upset in the process. And it probably, the fact that they both made it to market is astonishing. But having said that, it really does give an indication that we're finally appreciating where we come as a narrative form, how we can tell our stories differently than movies. We're not trying to become cinematic. That is the most obnoxious word that's been used in gaming parlance, is cinematic. Looking around this room is functionally cinematic. But they now know, okay, we have 17 hours, we have 20 hours to tell a story. How do we tell that story where we allow the player to also give themselves a sense they're helping bring this story to its conclusion? It really, both games are amazing.
So I was actually looking through my achievements to see what I played over the past 6 months, because I couldn't remember. And having only played the first 40 minutes of Last of Us, that's certainly, as we've discussed here, quite a feat. But I'm going to have to say with BioShock Infinite, because it's one of the few games that I've played where I was playing it and I got to the end, and as I kind of alluded to earlier, I don't like to read any game reviews or anything before I play a game because I want to make up my own mind. And I got to the end, and then I went out to the web and I started devouring the reviews, and then I found this one particular, I don't know who wrote it, maybe it was on IGN or I don't remember what it was, but it was like the definitive here's what's going on in BioShock, and I was like, holy shit. Holy shit, I missed that. Holy shit, I got to go play this again. Because there was so much, it was so complex, it was so intertwined. It had done something, to Adam's point, that had never been done with before in terms of how all these storylines were merging and we're doing time travel and things are going on and things are splitting and it was crazy. So for me, that was my favorite game because of the way it used narrative in a way that movies could never do it. They really could not do it. So it was a great example of how it elevated the art form of video games through storytelling, through technology, through gameplay. So for that one, that's my pick.
Cool. And for me, like BioShock Infinite and Last of Us, and even Dishonored.
Well, that was last year.
Was that last year?
That was last year. I loved
in
it.
In the last year.
Okay.
But okay. But for me, actually, one of my top games for this year is actually Monaco, and I know you hate it.
Yeah.
Right. What's that?
I think, yeah, we talked about that.
Yeah. But if you haven't seen Monaco, it's actually, you know, a much smaller development team than the teams that built these guys. It's on Steam. It's on Xbox. Is it on PSN? I don't think so. You should check it out. It's wonderful player co-op. Where you really have to work together to actually, you know, rob banks and stuff like that. But it's a very pixelated style, graphic style, and very simple story. But it's one of those things that just sucked me in, and I had to complete it, you know? Yeah. No respect from this guy. Yeah. Anyway, we are out of time. Thank you for coming along. I hope you guys got something out of this. I want to thank Adam, Larry, and Kevin. So let's give those guys. Good luck today. I hope you all go back up to the showcase, because these guys are going to be around. All the other judges are going to be around. Show off your creations. And good luck for tonight. I hope you're all really happy.